So I'm actually going to bring in national and local perspective here. And as I was listening to the other speakers, the safety theme is the theme that really came through for me. And it's going to really pervade the rest of this morning in my presentation. But before I start, there are a number of thanks out there that I need to give. I borrowed and stole a lot of these. No, I borrowed, for the record, because this is being recorded. I borrowed with permission a number of these slides, so I sort of weaved together a story here. So Wanda Barfield from the CDC, Ellen Pliska from ASTO, my friends at AmChip, Evelyn Delgado from the Texas Department of State Health Services, and of course, HRSA staff, Health Resources and Services Administration. So you'll see some familiar slides here, and I sort of pulled things together. So what I'm going to try to do here is this is going to be a very succinct presentation, to just briefly describe the history of risk-appropriate perinatal care. What does it mean? Why is it important? And then just touch on a couple of current initiatives, and then we can talk afterward. I'll stay for a few minutes, too, if you want to go into a bit more detail. I have nothing to disclose. I wasn't sure if we had to put a disclosure slide in, except that I'm using other people's slides. You'll figure out which ones they are. So really the concept of regionalization or perinatal regionalization, and now the term risk-appropriate care is being more and more used, which really is an outgrowth of a finding from the COIN, which I'll get to, this collaborative opportunity, collaborative improvement and innovation network. See, Michael, I got it right. Collaborative improvement and innovation network. But the concept of perinatal regionalization and getting moms and babies to the facilities they need to get to optimize outcomes really started in the 1960s. It sort of was pulled together in the 1970s in the first iteration of toward improving the outcome of pregnancy. I have a summary slide I'm going to show you in a minute of those three volumes. They're, ironically or interestingly, they were each 17 years apart. So you can do the math, starting in 1976. Also, the AAP and ACOG, the American Academy of Pediatrics, and the obstetricians put out something called Guidelines for Perinatal Care. So I'll be pulling from that. And then also the Healthy People 2010 and Healthy People 2020 goals have a specific goal related to the percent of very low birth weight infants, those are babies born under 1,500 grams, born at level 3 facilities or, you know, those higher, those risk-appropriate locations. So this is that summary slide, and really the point of this slide is to point out right here, this is really the first time, and March of Dimes didn't do this alone, we had many partners and there was a committee that came together and not only gave numbers to the levels of designation, but actually gave functionality or functional definitions to each level of care. It also pervaded TIOP2, and then in the last iteration, which I really had the privilege to edit, TIOP3, and the subtitle of that is enhancing perinatal health through quality, safety, and performance initiatives. So look what's happened sort of before really the emphasis on perinatal regionalization. These are trends in neonatal mortality. And this is, neonatal mortality has really come down and is certainly sort of leveled out here. And we can have a whole nother talk for an hour about why we think it's leveled out. But suffice it to say that it has. In terms of state definitions and criteria of neonatal services, I'm going to talk about two or three really important studies that came out, I think, in the last 4 or 5 years. This is from Lillian Blackman et al., including Wanda Barfield, and she actually gave me this information for the slides. And what they were looking at in terms of, and I'll get to the methodology in a minute, but the bottom line is that states regulate healthcare services, as many of you know, who are involved in state and local health departments. They regulate health services and facilities through licensure, through the promulgation of state health plans and distribution of those services, approving facility expansion and construction. Those are the CONs, or the certificates of need for hospitals, and then certainly implementing Title V programs. So states have a lot of power, and this will be one of my sort of pearls, I think, in the end, is that states really need to sort of take this issue on if they're going to make headway. And I'll give you one example of a state that I think is beginning to make some headway. So in this study that came out in the Journal of Perinatology, they did a systematic search of websites for all 50 states and D.C., and they looked at regulations in all those areas that I just talked about, so I'm not going to, you know, repeat them. And they abstracted this data, and this is an interesting map because basically, and the yellow doesn't come out that good here, but there were 33 states that met criteria for previously defined levels of neonatal services. And so the neonatal services back in 1976, there have been various iterations of the levels of care, and the last one that came out from the American Academy of Pediatrics for neonatal services was in 2012. And the last guidelines for perinatal care, which included the obstetricians, also came out in 2012, which I'll get to. But there were 33 states here that met the criteria through their study and looking at this review for levels of neonatal care services. Some that the rest either named or deemed facilities a level, but they didn't meet the definition. But the bottom line here, and some lack defined levels of care at all. The bottom line here is, and I'm sure some of this has changed since 2008 when they looked at this data, but there's lots of variability and variation. Another key takeaway of this talk, the variability and the variation. So to sort of go fairly quickly through some of their results, I'm going to sort of give you the bottom line. In terms of the variation, birth weight under 1,500 grams or preterm birth 28 to 32 weeks was the most frequently used criteria to indicate the need for the highest level of care. So really, the way the states defined their levels of care was sort of all over the place. So they had these functional criteria. They also, some of them had utilization criteria, specifying one or more utilization requirements for special care and neonatal intensive care unit care without direct correlation to the presence of functional criteria occurred in many states. So they used things like volume and occupancy in terms of utilization criteria. The next slide is sort of a busy slide, and I encourage you to look at the paper, but the reason I'm putting this up is to show, they looked at compliance criteria, and basically just look at the columns in terms of license renewal, certificate of need, and then affiliated program certifications and work with state health departments. But the mechanisms of assessing compliance with hospital neonatal services, again, among these 33 states with defined level of neonatal service, they really varied in terms of what they used. And most frequently, it was license renewal. And there's questions about how often that should be done, and lots of interesting discussion, you know, in this article. I have all of the conclusions of the article here that I was going to read to you. But you know, the bottom line again is which I'm not going to do. I'm not going to read all of them to you. But it's again the importance of consistency and being uniform and leading locally. They also had some discussion about funding of level three care and in terms of how that's connected. They also talked about, oh, this is interesting. If you look at I mentioned the AAP guidance for levels of care that came out. So only 22 states referred to that, to the AAP guidance, which is supposedly like standard of care, right? And then I'm a pediatrician, so. And the guidelines of perinatal care were referenced by only 17 states. So you see, it's this sort of all over the place. This also comes down to leadership, too, right? People who are willing to take the lead in certain states, or all states, hopefully. I'm seeing people from various states who I know are taking a leadership role to really sort of get this on the docket and to move the needle forward. The second paper that I wanted to mention very briefly, there's another one, of course, which has Wanda Barfield's fingerprints all over it, and Lillian Blackman and others, was a meta-analysis that was done that actually came out in JAMA in 2010. And really, the bottom line of this paper, they reviewed 30 years of evidence on perinatal regionalization and from 1976 to 2010. The question was, how important is it to have level of care at birth, the right level of care birth to very low birth rate infant survival. So what is the connection between the level of care at birth and very low birth weight infant survival? And the bottom line is that there was a 62% increased odds of neonatal or pre-discharge mortality if the infant was born in a non-level 3 or a high level of care hospital. It was also true for extremely low birth weight and very preterm birth, but that's really the bottom line. So access to risk-appropriate perinatal care improves infant mortality outcomes in those populations. This is just a map. This reminds me, it's again, this is older data now, but for the percent of very low birth weight infants delivered in level 3 NICUs, it's all over the place, right? I mean, literally all over the map. So this is guidelines of perinatal care that I was talking about. It came out in 2012. And just a couple of quotes from this, you'll see everyone is saying, you know, we gotta walk the walk and not just talk the talk. But the determination of the appropriate level of care to be provided by a given hospital should be guided by prevailing local and state health regulations, national professional organization guidelines, and identified regional perinatal health care service needs. That is a quote, and they also note substantial variation. For those wondering, these are the levels of care. I didn't put all the detail under here in terms of what they mean, but one is basic, and then four is the most advanced care, okay, in terms of surgeries and things like that. And then, there's been a lot more done. I put that in quotes because my obstetric colleagues may disagree, but so there's been a lot more written, at least, about neonatal levels of care. There needs to be more out there in the literature, I think, on sort of maternal services, although my OB colleagues would say to me, it's in guidelines of perinatal care, which it is, and they split it up like this. But I think there's going to be more coming out from ACOG about this in the near future. Sort of transitioning here to, so what can you do, what can states do to improve the provision of risk-appropriate care? And I want to talk about the COIN and also a little bit about one state and statewide perinatal quality improvement collaboratives and what they can do. So so Michael Liu is sitting right here, and it was really his brainchild from MTHB and HRSA to initiate this COIN, and this is through Regions 4 and 6 in those 13 states. And I'm only going to really talk about, just briefly here, about the perinatal regionalization work group. And so my takeaways from what was done there and maybe some lessons learned. So in this strategy work group, what they were trying to do, which was a huge task, mind you, was they wanted to take those healthy people measures that I mentioned earlier and, you know, again, walk the walk and in a very short period of time. So, again, right there is a lesson learned. I mean, it's hard to do, and it usually takes more time, right? Like Happy said with mobile health, it takes more time than you think it's going to take, but you got to start and you got to try, right? So they wanted to get 90% of very low birth rate infants born in risk-appropriate locations or a 20% improvement in baseline percentage of very low birth rate infants in risk-appropriate locations. So this was their approach, and basically uniform definitions, clarifying definitions, measurement being very important, measured number of births by facility, calculating very low birth weight mortality rate by facility. There's a lot more detail under sort of the methodology. And just to say, I mean, there are many, many people who gave lots and lots of time to this initiative, besides Wanda Barfield, Kate Menard, Carolyn Stample, Marissa Rice, lots of people. And they did all kinds of interesting things or tried to do lots of things like identifying and engaging those stakeholders, meeting with the Level 1 and Level 2 hospitals to review their data, to discuss options for improvement. We learned a lot through this process, and I think we need to use these lessons learned to help, you know, the rest of the states as we go national with the COIN as well. So I touched on some of these things, the importance to learn from stakeholders. So, I mean, so don't be discouraged here. I mean, so these are the results so far, okay? So this is Region 4, and this is Region 6, and this is them combined. The bottom line is that there really hasn't been a lot of change yet. And I think one of the lessons learned we hear would be, you know, we need more time. I mean, there's a lot of energy around this topic. This area of focus, I believe, is going to continue for the rest of the COINs as we roll them out. But in terms of key achievements, 13 states, they were engaged. There's lots of peer learning. The state health officials were involved and engaged. They did hospital assessments, but there were challenges, and we need to learn from these. Moving from strategy to tests of change, it's hard. How do you bring quality improvement to the public health arena? And quality improvement has been done in hospitals mainly, right? How do you bring that really quick cycle of implementing something, evaluating it, making the changes needed to move forward? How do you do that? And I applaud Michael for, you know, bringing that vision to public health. And improvements in risk-appropriate care, it really is driven by policy change. And I have some policy colleagues in here I know. And again, you may need a longer timeline to see those changes. So here's a summary slide. Again, thank you to my colleagues for, I totally took this slide. I didn't even change the fonts or anything. But in terms of the successes and lessons learned, it's not even on the March of Dimes, you know, format. So, but I think I talked about a lot of these things. But I wanted to get back to TIOP3 and what is the March of Dimes doing? I get asked this all the time. So, yeah, Scott, that's nice. This is really important. So what's the March of Dimes doing about this? Not only are our state directors of program services and our volunteers involved in a lot of those discussions I mentioned, because and some of them are here, but this was addressed in Toward Improving the Outcome of Pregnancy 3 in Chapter 11. And, oh, there's Wanda Barfield again who took on the topic in TIOP3. And so we do talk about the importance of all the things I was just mentioning about standards, definitions, and guidelines across the country, to use them consistently, that this will optimize effective regionalization and maximize risk-appropriate care. Something we did do after the 2012 guidelines came out from the American Academy of Pediatrics is, I mean, we are basically, I think Janice would agree, we are an advocacy organization. We advocate for the consumer. For the mom, for the dad, for the family. We do a lot of work with healthcare professionals, with government agencies too, but we are looked upon by consumers as the trusted source. So this is what I wanted to really point you to, which is right in here. This is on our website. Questions, you know, how can you plan for the right level of care for your baby? The sorts of questions to ask your provider. Is my pregnancy at high risk? What kind of care do I need during my pregnancy? What levels of care for my baby are available in my area? If my baby needs a higher level of nursery care, where would he or she go? So we have this information for families. So just a bit about statewide perinatal quality improvement collaboratives, and then this is really my wrap, and we'll take questions. I think there's a role for statewide perinatal quality improvement collaboratives in conjunction with the COINS to the COIN effort, the Collaborative Improvement and Innovation Network, which is to reduce basically infant mortality. There's lots of opportunity. And so based on the data that we have at the March of Dimes as well as the CDC, we think there are now 37 statewide perinatal quality improvement collaboratives. You know what I'm talking about? You know what these are? You're probably on some of them, right? These are groups that get together, multiple stakeholders who want to improve the quality of perinatal care. This could be a topic. You know, progesterone could be a topic. Early elective delivery reduction could be a topic. But you know what I'm talking about. So just one example here, huge state, many, many births, one of the top five states in the country in terms of numbers of births. David Lakey, the health commissioner there, just a complete pioneer in this regard. Evelyn Delgado as well, assistant commissioner of health. So he created the Healthy Texas Babies Expert Panel, okay? Then they launched, this is over the last like 3 years, okay? Then they launched the Texas Collaborative for Healthy Mothers and Healthy Babies, the first, I believe, perinatal collaborative in Texas. And then through some legislative activity, they created this NICU, Neonatal Intensive Care Unit Council. And what they've been charged to do down there is, in Texas, or right next door, actually, because I'm usually in New York or Massachusetts, so I say down there, but we're really close to Texas, aren't we? Standards for operating NICUs, neonatal intensive care units, maternal levels of care, and a hospital designation process. And they're sort of right in the middle of that. So I think we're going to see some things coming out in early 2015. So we're talking about 600 hospitals in Texas. Close to 300 of them are delivering babies. It's a lot of potential there. So just to wrap, and to wrap on time, and congratulations, team, we did it. So the bottom line is there need to be consistent definitions, and they need to be uniformly, may I say, enforced across the country in all the different ways that we talked about. It's a big challenge, and we need to include maternal care, and more is coming, I think, from ACOG in terms of those that push. Antenatal transport as well, so just right around birth, before birth. And state regulations of perinatal systems vary. So if you're interested in this topic, I encourage you to go back to your state and find out what's going on and what role you might be able to play there. And feel free to give us a call. You can give Michael Lou a call. I mean, I know they can. We're here to help you. But being cared for and born at the right facility matters. It does. The data shows it. It's it's out there. Partnership, commitment, collaboration, you've heard it over and over again in everything that we do in public health is so important, including for maximizing risk-appropriate care, and that we as public health professionals play a vital role in this arena as well as in reducing mortality. So thank you very much and appreciate your staying for the session.